ladies and gentlemen, it was a cold-blooded, premeditated murder.
Find the defendant guilty.
Welcome to my home. Enter freely of your own will and leave some of the happiness you bring.
Count Dracula?
I am Dracula. And I bid you welcome, Mr. Harker, to my house.
Hey, welcome back.
Hello. What's
up? Spooky month part two.
Mm-hmm.
So as you guys know, we've been doing the horror movie theme with Molly starting us off with that Child's Play case.
It do be like that.
It do be like that. But mine is kind of more of, instead of a movie inspiring a crime, this crime inspired a book, which became a movie, and what we know of Dracula today.
Yay.
So I'm really excited to share this with you. Now, this is the case of Elizabeth Bathory. Have you heard of her?
Of course.
Of course. And she was considered the Blood Countess. So she was like the original inspiration for Dracula. And in 1602, rumors began to circulate around the village of Tresen, which is present-day Slovakia. So peasant girls were looking for servant work in the Secha castle, and they were just vanishing. They did have suspicion of who could have done it. However, they just really wanted to seek the truth about all of the mysterious disappearances first. And their main suspect was Countess Elizabeth Bathory. Elizabeth was described as one of the most vicious female serial killers in all of history because her story crosses the lines between what we know is fact and what we know is fiction. So it's kind of like idolizing this like folklore version, but she was still a very tragic, vicious killer.
Yeah, because when you hear about her, it does feel like a folklore. And you have to actually put yourself back in the spot where it's like, well, I was actually a real freaking person who did real things. So that does make a lot of sense, because once you turn into a folklore or something of that nature, like, you instantly become even more ominous than anything else, because people do add spins on it or anything extra that they want to.
Exactly. And it's already hard to kind of pinpoint what is the truth and what's not the truth. And we'll definitely get into that later on. But just the fact that her crimes became something that could only be described as something out of a fiction book, like, that should already tell you how scary this woman was. With that being said, some people think that Elizabeth was a vampire with supernatural powers. However, there's also fact finders who tried to put that theory to rest, stating that powerful men actually created those stories and kind of like committed outrages on those missing girls to seize Elizabeth's wealth. So there's two different sides of the story, and I will get to both of them. Now, even though the vampire part of it is obviously the like folklore version, I still, just a little part of me kind of hopes that it's just kind of true, because I mean, you and I were very into stuff like that. Obviously not murder, but like the mysterious of the unknown type of deal.
It's like a supernatural spin on a real person.
Exactly. So a part of me is kind of like, it makes sense. But another part of me is like, science, you know? Elizabeth's action resulted in the nickname of the Blood Countess, and it may have been the source of inspiration for Bram Stoker's Dracula. So she was described as the original vampire. To get the full picture, we do have to go into Elizabeth's background. So she was born on August 7th, 1560 in Hungary. Now, what is she, Molly?
She is a Leo.
Those dangs Leos.
That makes total sense. Those dangs Leos. Real.
She was a very beautiful woman with lots of money. And in her time, she had great education. So in 1560, obviously, like, schooling and everything, it was not as prominent as it is today, but in the 1500s, great education. Elizabeth was also very social, and she was in a high social position. And it was because she was a part of the Bathory family. The Bathory family ruled Transylvania in like a virtually independent principle, and they were in the Kingdom of Hungary. So she was the daughter of a powerful Hungarian family. And unfortunately, she was also the product of inbreeding between Baron George Bathory and Baroness Anna Bathory. So already family lineage is just all kinds of lack. She did live a life of privilege and was always surrounded by walls and taught the ways of an aristocrat. So on top of that, Elizabeth also had other unique features in her life that weren't really talked about. One of which was that she was allegedly instructed in Satanism by her uncle, who was a devil-worshipping alchemist. And she was also introduced to witchcraft and sadomasochism by one of her aunts. On top of all of this, it was also believed that she had suffered from epileptic seizures and extreme outbursts of rage directed towards whoever happened to be nearby. It was typically servants, but it wasn't necessarily diagnosed because in that time of age, you didn't really know what was causing these type of episodes, and mental health wasn't really something that they knew about for the most part or even wanted to study. But notes from history do state that that is what it could have been. When Elizabeth was about 11 to 12 years old, she was betrothed to Ferenc Nedasty, and he was known as the Black Knight of Hungary. And she was set to marry this man. As a soldier, he was also known for disemboweling and paling, as well as playing football with the heads of Turkish captives. He was also caught dancing with their corpse. Now, a couple years into their engagement, Elizabeth allegedly had an affair and got pregnant by this random man. It was unknown who it was, but she did have a baby by this lover, and he was of lower class. When Ferenc found out, he reportedly had him castrated and torn to pieces by dogs. Elizabeth did give birth to a baby girl, and that child was quietly hidden from the world afterwards. In 1575, so a couple years after Elizabeth and Ferenc got engaged, this is when they officially got married, and she was only 15 years old. Elizabeth actually socially outranked her husband, and that is the reason why she kept her surname Bathory. In fact, Ferenc actually took her name and just added it to his. They did live together in one of the many castles that his family owned in Hungary at Sever and Sich, which in again is modern day Slovakia. His wedding gift to Elizabeth was his very own household in which he grew up in, and it was a castle which would again be in Slovakia today. So this castle was bought by his mom in 1569, in which was given to then Ferenc, who transferred it to Elizabeth during their nuptials. Together, they owned that castle and 17 other adjacent villages. So they owned a big lot of land.
So it's basically like two very powerful and like prominent people building like an even bigger kingdom together.
Exactly. Yeah. They were both very well known. I mean, Ferenc was a soldier, very brutal. So he was praised by his brutality, especially with the Turkish at the time. And Elizabeth, carrying the name Bathory, was very sociable. So those two just kind of made the perfect,
like a power couple.
Exactly.
In the times.
Exactly. The perfect couple. He was always ambitious, and as a soldier, he was often away. During his travels, Elizabeth would run the estates and take various lovers, and the couple's first child was actually born 10 years after their marriage in 1585. I'm thinking what you guys are thinking is this child the product of her and Fairnik, or is it a product of a farm? That is unknown. I'm not saying that it's one or the other, but it is just known in history books that they had their firstborn. So I can probably imagine it was, in fact, Fairnik's. Altogether, Elizabeth gave birth to 5 children, 2 of which died as infants, but she did have 2 daughters and a son who survived. In 1578, Fairnik became a chief commander in the Hungarian army, and he had a huge military campaign against the Ottoman Empire, and Elizabeth, in the meantime, was still taking over the estates and also governing the local population. So again, another power couple move. They were just kicking ass and taking names this whole time. This did come to an end when Fairnik died on January 4th, 1604, and he was only 48. Elizabeth at the time was 43 when he passed away. In history, it's recorded that he died of a mysterious and sudden illness in the middle of battle, but this disease had been killing him, and it was kind of unknown in general, but it was the disease of a lower limb, and it's been bothering him for at least 2 years prior to him passing away from this illness. So they didn't really know exactly what it was, and it took 2 years for him to be succumbed by it.
Do you think it was maybe cancer or something?
I feel like because they described it as a disease to the lower limbs, it could have been like gangrene or like trench foot or something that like was kind of more
like bacteria related. Yes. Instead of like,
yeah, exactly. Because he was a soldier. He was always in battle. He was very brutal. I could only imagine the conditions he was, you know, put under. So I feel like it wasn't necessarily like a natural cause of death. Like cancer is kind of natural in a way. Obviously, it's something attacking your system, but this was more, I feel like, bacterial. After her husband's death, this is when rumors of Elizabeth's cruelty began to surface. Now, at first, it was stated that she had been killing after her husband. However, there has been some witnesses that testified against that and stated that the murders actually began while her husband was still alive and with his knowledge and participation. It's been noted that this type of behavior is very typical in sadistic female serial killers who target victims for sexual motives, and they're almost always accompanied by a male partner who is usually dominant, in which the female will mimic. So I could kind of understand her behavior, especially seeing and being married to this brutal human already.
Yeah, he's already sadistic in his own way. Like, you can only imagine if he was in there engaging it. You know, you never know what they did together.
There was later a testimony that was found, and it's stated, and I quote, "At Savar during summer, his lordship Count Fairnik Nadasty had a young girl on trust until stark naked. While his lordship looked on with his own eyes, the girl was then covered over with honey and made to stand throughout a day and night so she'd be covered in insect bites. She collapsed into unconsciousness. His lordship taught the countess that in such a case one must place pieces of paper dipped in oil between the toes of the girl and set them on fire. Even if she was already half dead, she would jump up." End quote. Although the idea that surrounded Elizabeth was first thought of as a mimic behavior from her husband, it was also told that she enjoyed torturing and killing these young girls as well. At first, they were just servants at her castles and daughters of the local peasants. However, later on, they also included girls that were sent over to her castle by local gentry families to learn good manners. We'll also get way more into that later, but most people believe that she thought in her head that drinking the blood of these young girls would preserve her youthfulness and her looks, so this is where the folklore of Dracula began. Witnesses have also told stories of her stabbing victims or biting their breasts, hands, faces, and arms, while also cutting them with scissors, sticking needles into their lips, or burning them with red-hot irons, coins, or keys. There were other accusations which included closing them in spiked iron maidens, like in a garlic press, to extract their blood. She also had a weakness for covering villagers in honey and watching as insects and animals devoured them, so something she learned from her husband. Some of Elizabeth's other alleged tortures included forcing victims to cook and eat their own flesh, forcing them to stand in buckets of ice outside until they froze to death, starvation, poisoning, and on one occasion there was an instance of having a gypsy man sewn up into the belly of a dead horse. So she too turned out to be this very brutal and vicious woman. Her preferred instrument was actually scissors, and she would use these to cut off hands, noses, and genitals. Some witnesses also stated that her favorite thing to do with these scissors were to use them to slice open the skin between her victim's fingers and toes. After Ferenc's death, Elizabeth also allegedly had these girls undress, only to be thrown onto the ground while she began to beat them so hard that someone could literally scoop up blood from the floor. It was massive puddles of blood. She would bite out individual pieces of flesh from these girls with her own teeth, and she would attack these girls with knives while hitting and torturing them in many different ways. There was an encounter where she singed the private parts of a girl with a burning candle flame. There were also stories of when Elizabeth was sick in bed and she couldn't really beat anyone herself, but she still felt the need to devour these young women. So she compelled a servant to bring up one of her victims to her bedside, where she would rise from her pillow and bite off pieces of flesh from these girls' necks, shoulders, and breasts. This was just a small sample of what she was accused of at her trial, but you could kind of grasp the whole picture.
And plus the stuff that they don't say, the stuff that people maybe didn't even see or nobody was around to even see. You could only imagine what that would be.
Exactly, especially when, you know, she doesn't have a husband. All of the people that were in the castle either worked for her or were sent to her to be taught. So it's like she had nobody to really answer to besides herself. Even though there are stories of these horrific acts of violence, some of them could have been made up as well, especially the supernatural stories about Elizabeth. And that's what really began the terrifying legacy that we know today. At the time of the investigation, again, this is still in like the 1500s, some people accused her of cannibalism, and others claim to have seen her have sex with the devil himself. So this is where fact and fiction kind of are entangled. The most damning accusation, though, was one that inspired her infamous nickname, the Blood Countess, because there were rumors that she was a vampire and allegedly bathed in the blood of her young victims in an attempt to maintain a youthful appearance. Most of these disappearances and possible murders at the time of peasant women have been previously ignored because they were of lower class. Now, there were claims in 1609 that she had murdered women from noble families, and that is what attracted the attention and claims of her murdering these young girls. Elizabeth's cousin, whose name was Prince Gyorgy Thurzo, now he was the Count Palatine of Hungary, and he was ordered by Matthias, who was at the time the King of Hungary, to investigate. Sure enough, her cousin took depositions from people living in the area surrounding her estates and found out that Elizabeth had tortured and killed more than 600 girls with the assistance of her servants. So a lot of these peasant women and a mix of noble women were missing and brutally murdered by Elizabeth. According to witnesses, a lot of these victims were girls that were just lured into the castle with promises of work, and these were the peasants. However, she eventually expanded her sights on murdering daughters of the gentry, like I said before, who were sent to the castle for education, and also she would kidnap girls who have never wanted to come to the castle on their own. So a bunch of different types of women were either lured and tricked or sent over to this castle with promises of work or education or being taught manners. So it was just a lot of different women that should have never been there to begin with. One of the most noted examples was, in fact, the year before her official arrest. And this is when about 25 young women from declining minor noble families were invited to stay at Elizabeth's castle. And you can only imagine how that ended. Some of the minor aristocratic families were happy to send their daughters to Elizabeth, and they were just hoping that somehow they could raise the prestige of their family through an association with the countess. During their stay, several of the girls just up and vanished. And when concerned parents began to inquire about their daughters, of course, Elizabeth would make up some random reports that one of the other girls had either murdered most of the younger daughters for their jewels and then committed suicide. When these families demanded that the body of the girls be returned, this is when Elizabeth refused, and she stated that a suicide fatality had to be immediately placed unmarked on an unconsecrated ground. And she explained that multiple deaths have also been caused by outbreaks of disease and cited the fear of an epidemic panic as the reason for secretly burying or burning those victims. So she wasn't dumb when it came to hiding her evidence, and she always had a backup plan when people asked. Now, at the time, epidemics were quite common, and a lot of medicinal areas were not explored. The final events that precipitated Elizabeth's torturous reign began when a Lutheran reverend, whose name was Janos, and he was assigned to take charge of a church in the Slovakian village of Kačis. This is where Elizabeth lorded the castle, which was overlooking the village below. This reverend was sent to replace the previous pastor who had recently passed away. And on his journey to the castle, just like in any other horror film, of course, the closer he came to the castle, the more the reverend began to hear peasants talk and speak about vampires and mutilations of young women in the town. He even had warnings of evil deeds that happened in the castle alone. So according to the legend, this reverend investigated the reports of murdered girls carefully, collected the evidence, and eventually denounced the Countess Elizabeth to his church superiors, who finally called in the civil authorities. That is how the allegations began. On December 26, 1610, Count Georgi decided to visit the castle without Elizabeth's knowledge. He decided to start his travels to seek more knowledge on these accusations. And this was during around like Christmas time, and she was celebrating the holiday in her manor house in town. So she wasn't even in the castle. On the evening of December 29th, one of her servant girls was caught red-handed stealing a pear. This enraged Elizabeth, and she ordered the girl to be taken out to the laundry room, stripped naked, and tied there. Elizabeth and one other female servant took turns beating this woman to death with a club. There were reports stating that Elizabeth was so covered and soaked in blood, she had to change her clothes. It wasn't just the beating that killed the servant, because she was, in fact, a very strong woman, and she was trying to come out of it alive. But when she wasn't dying fast enough for Elizabeth, she reportedly was just tired of beating her and ordered one of her other servants to stab her to death with a pair of scissors instead. This is when this young girl's body was drugged and left out by a doorway in the courtyard for disposal the very next morning. Almost at the exact moment that her body is being dragged out, this is, of course, after traveling 2 days from Bratislava, Elizabeth's cousin, Georgi, arrived. He ordered the servants to stand aside, and as his raiding party also arrived and bursted into the courtyard, this is when he immediately saw the bloody, battered body, which was still warm.
That's actually really crazy, like, to think that timing was just perfect for that, because still, while you're telling me this, it still feels so fairy tale. You know what I mean? It still feels so fairy tale. So to like hear that it was actually reported that they found an actual body and this is a real human being who was actually really brutally murdered, I don't know. That just made it a little bit more realistic for me for some reason, like them actually finding proof.
Yes. And the fact that it was, like you said, perfect timing, the fact that she brutally and, you know, like murdered this young servant, dragging the body out, and it wasn't herself alone dragging the body out, but her servants were doing the deeds of the countess. And for her cousin, whom was a prince, by the way, to find literally this beaten, murdered girl, it kind of puts it into perspective that this isn't just folklore, and maybe a lot of folklore is based off of true events like this one alone. After finding the body of the servant, he immediately required a search of the premises, in which he revealed the body of 2 more brutally murdered girls in the manor house. After an even deeper search of the house on the hill and its surroundings, Georgi found numerous dispersed bodies that were hidden at the bottom of the tower. He busted into her chambers, and according to legend, Elizabeth was found sitting on a stool, chewing on the mutilated, dying body of a girl. And you can only imagine this setting the scene of the Dracula tales, because she was chomping on the necks and the face and just literally eating the flesh of these young women. Prince Georgi then charged Elizabeth with the deaths of only 80 girls. However, one witness who came forward later stated that she claims to have seen a book that Elizabeth kept to herself, and this is where she recorded the names of all of her victims, which were about 650 in total. This diary, however, was never found, and that's kind of, again, the mix-up between fact and fiction. Of course, you kind of want it to be dramatized in the fiction realm, because it's scarier to see a higher body count than only 80, even though 80, even now to this day in real life, is still a high body count.
Yeah, you don't even see serial killers nowadays. We hardly have any, but killing 80. But it does. It does add shock value when you put 600. So who knows? It could have been just 80. Maybe not. Maybe it could have been more.
And she had years.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was going to say before. She had so many years to build that body count.
During Elizabeth's trial, which only lasted for 1 day, she was sentenced to house arrest. I know. Molly's literally shaking her head.
It's because of her status, obviously.
Absolutely. And I'll absolutely get into that as well. Elizabeth wasn't the only one who was paying for her crimes, because at the end of the trial, there were 2 female servants who also was sentenced to have their fingers torn away with hot pincers before being thrown alive into a fire. So that's just the example of the difference between social classes and their punishments. A male servant, because of his youth, was sentenced to decapitation, and his body was also thrown onto the fire. There was a 4th servant who was acquitted and then vanished from the record. A few months later, another one of Elizabeth's servants was charged, tried, and sentenced to death as well. So again, under my assumption, it's because of Elizabeth's high societal impact that she was not sentenced to death. However, since her servants were of lower class, they didn't really have that much power socially. While Elizabeth did petition the courts to make an appearance to defend herself, her family blocked all of these petitions. She also attempted to challenge her cousin's authority, but he condemned her in front of several of her relatives, saying, and I quote, "You, Elizabeth, are like a wild animal. You are in the last months of our lives. You do not deserve to breathe the air on earth, nor to see the light of the Lord. You shall disappear from this world and shall never reappear in it again. The shadows will envelop you and you will find time to repent your beast of your life. I condemn you, Lady of Cachis, to a lifelong imprisonment in your own castle." End quote. After this, Elizabeth spent the remainder of her days in a small room within her own castle. And the windows were actually blocked up, and only several small openings for ventilation and food were given to her. She had no contact with the outside world. On August 21st of 1614, Elizabeth was complaining to her bodyguard that her hands were feeling very cold, and his reply was, and I quote, "It's nothing, mistress, just go lay down." She then went to sleep and found the following morning, where she died at the age of 54. There was no mention of her name in Hungary because it was prohibited for the next 100 years based off of her sentencing. She was originally buried in the church. However, her body was then moved because villagers were protesting this, having the Countess of Blood in their cemetery. Her final resting place was in an undisclosed spot in her family crypt, where in the castle where she was born. We are actually very lucky to hear about Elizabeth's story, especially the truth of it and more fact than the folklore, because her trial was actually held in a secret remote Slovakian town in 1611. Because her family had such a powerful societal impact, they immediately sealed her records. There were no newspapers, no pamphlets, no reports on it, and none of the ruling families wanted details of the horrendous charges against their relatives to be released to the public scrutiny because they didn't want that to be their family name. They also didn't want Elizabeth's estates confiscated by the crown or the crown's debt to the family canceled. In reality, her sentencing was more so to protect the family name, and it was more of like a selfish act than it was to give back to the families of the victims. It also didn't help that Elizabeth was not allowed to appear at her trial, and instead of public execution, she was actually walled into her castle alive. Elizabeth would have remained an anonymous monster had not a scholar whose name was Father Laszlo discovered in 1720 the trial records. And this is about 100 years after Elizabeth's death. Father Laszlo restored the legendary vampire to human form with a name, identity, and a history, with a detailed description of her crimes in a book which he published only in Latin in 1729. In 1796, a man named Michael Wagner had a book and titled it Anthropological Philosophy. It was the first to widely publicize the story of our own Blood Countess Elizabeth. Now, one of the main things this book focused on was her allegedly bathing in blood as her skincare obsession. So this is, again, another version of events. This book also told the story of a chambermaid who told Elizabeth her hair was out of place, so the Countess struck this maid so hard that this girl's nose sprayed blood onto Elizabeth's face. While she wiped the blood away from this maid's face, that is when the Countess discovered that her skin seemed rejuvenated. And that was the beginning of her bathing her entire body in fresh blood and murdered the 650 girls for this purpose alone. There are issues with this story because a lot of the other literature on Elizabeth kind of morphs into different variations. So, for example, the common story of Elizabeth's handmaid also had another version where this chambermaid was struck because she pulled a few strands of the countess's hair while combing it, and that was what resulted in her being struck in the face. There's also more stories on how these girls had to be virgins or of aristocratic origins before Elizabeth would believe in the rejuvenating power of their blood. In the 1970s, a Boston College professor and Fulbright scholar, whose name was Raymond T. McNally, and his colleagues, Radu Florescu, somehow gained rare access to Hungarian and Romanian archives, and this is when they discovered an abundance of original documents from the trial of Elizabeth Báthory. It wasn't until 1983 that we started to get more of an accurate view of what crimes the Blood Countess actually was charged with, and the blood bathing myth was the first one to fall. So she never actually did bathe in blood, at least from which we know of from the documents. It was reviewed that the whole bathing in blood thing was just local gossip, and that's what the folklore picked up by writers in the 18th century. That is what injected into this dark history that we know of today, and the likely explanation for it was that she was always covered in blood after torturing her victims, so it always appeared as if she had been bathing in it, so she was always soaked in this deep, dark red color of blood. In the 1970s, Professor McNally also discovered a letter in the Hungarian archives from Reverend Janos to his superiors describing how the night before him reaching the town, in which Elizabeth sent six invisible black cats and dogs to attack him in his home in the middle of night. And this was just a letter that was found. There's no truth behind this, but as he fought off these black cats and dogs who were apparently invisible, he was quoted screaming, "You devils go to hell," which none of the servants could really observe any of the animals that the Reverend wrote. But he also was quoted, "As you can see, this was the doing of the devil." Now, this is kind of where it gets good. As these Hungarian archives were found, Elizabeth's trial starts becoming more of a conspiracy. And this is how I know you're going to get into it, Molly. There were some literature that emerged in the Hungarian archives, particularly the nationalist periods of the 20th century, in which suggested that Elizabeth was entirely innocent and only a victim of the family plot to seize her wealth. Since the discovery of more court transcripts and witness statements, Gheorghe's correspondence and the other records in the 1970s that were found, the real story of Elizabeth is now better known today. What we do know is that there was a secret trial, and it did begin within 3 days of the Countess' arrest. It also happened at Gheorghe's Courts of Justice in Bitka on January 2nd, 1611. We also know that all of the court officials and jury members owed their allegiance to Prince Gheorghe. With all of that being said, it is conspired that their plan was to quickly sentence Elizabeth to life imprisonment, described as perpetual incarceration. Now, hear me out. The attempt of the Hungarian crown to seize Elizabeth's property was, in fact, evident. Elizabeth was a Protestant when the Counter-Reformation and restoration of the Catholic power became the priority of the Hungarian Parliament. So she was already the opposite religion, and it was frowned upon to be Protestant at the time. So she was pretty much seen as an outcast because of her beliefs. Religious texts also exposed the Báthory family to all manner of hostility during that period as well. Europe was also in the throes of paranoia by witchcraft hysteria, and thousands of women during this time was being accused of heretical and satanic crimes and burned at the stake or hung during this time period as well for witchcraft. So even though this was a huge thing going on, witchcraft was never a charge that was brought against Elizabeth, which you would think, especially given the nature of her crimes and the folklore that it brung, you would think that witchcraft would have been probably the first thing on their mind. Even the rumors of her bathing in virgin girl's blood was also never introduced in any of these court proceedings. It was mainly because there was no evidence or testimony to it. So in today's day and age and courts, that would have been circumstantial evidence. It's also argued that the proceedings against Countess Elizabeth were largely politically motivated due to her extensive wealth and ownership of large areas in Slovakia and Hungary. Elizabeth's wealth also grew when her husband died. These charges, however, to the murders of about 50 to 80 girls or so, does have logical consistency to the descriptions of the offenses and murders from many different witnesses. So it is noted that Elizabeth might not have been completely innocent overall, but probably not to the extent of which the court had been describing these crimes. One source, which was dated on September 16th, 1610, which was 4 months prior to Elizabeth's arrest, mentioned that 34 affidavits described Elizabeth's torture and murder of many girls and virgins. So again, not completely innocent. A second source that is dated July 26, 1611, and it is from the Crown's attempt to retry Elizabeth. And it did collect testimony from about 224 witnesses that attested to the, and I quote, diabolical impulses of Elizabeth, who murdered many innocent virgins of noble and non-noble birth, end quote. Now with that, Elizabeth was still addicted to committing sadistic acts of torture, and these attempts were in fact recorded. So, do you think Elizabeth was guilty, or was it a plot by her own family to seize all of her belongings and wealth? And if so, do you think that these missing girls were actually kidnapped and disposed of by her own family and enemies? Because I'm not too sure that it's one or the other. I feel like it could have been a combination of both.
I mean, that's a really good question because my problem is because it was so long ago that I'm torn because I'm like, where's the proof? And then it's like, well, these proofs are, you know, these documents that we transcribed in three different languages and this letter that we got from a pastor who was getting attacked by invisible animals. Like, it's all stuff that makes me feel like this gotta be bullshit. You know what I mean? But then it's just been told so many times and it's still history. So it's like, is it real history? I don't know. I'm torn. I don't know if I have an answer. I think I could probably sit on the fine line of like taking the story for what it is and that's a part of history, but I don't know if I believe all of it.
I agree. I definitely think that it could have been a little bit of both. I think that, you know, back then everybody was reaching for a power grab, mm-hmm. right? So her family, knowing Elizabeth married into this powerful family as well, knowing that Elizabeth was successful, that she had a successful husband, she owned 17 estates, a castle, she had everything that she could have ever wanted. I mean, if you and the Bathory family didn't have all of those things and could have been, you know, riddled by guilt and jealousy and envy, I could only imagine a plot to destroy her whole life, you know? But
I have to say this before I forget. When you say all that and you say that it's like this big elaborated plot, like why did it take them all those years to build up this thing? Like it was back then, they still had power. Why couldn't they have gone about it a different fucking way? That seemed a lot more easy and like cut and dry and this is done. Like why couldn't she die in a freak accident? Or like why couldn't something else happen? Why did it gotta be, oh, for like 30 plus years she's been murdering and torturing people and then all of a sudden now she's kept into a cage? Like I don't know, like they could have, and they had to have so much imagination to really go through like every single torturous thing. Like, that's a lot of manpower.
I agree. I definitely think that, especially knowing the nature of her husband alone and like how Fernick was just brutal in his slayings for, you know, the military and everything else, I think that they probably could have just known the nature of her relationship and her marriage and what they did together. I'm not downplaying that part. I definitely think that she's not innocent 100%. Mm-hmm. But I think that there probably were rumors that spread across the, you know, Slovakia in general, and it probably reached back. And I feel like maybe that is what the family was kind of banking on.
Mm-hmm.
Of Elizabeth is brutal. She's doing all these things. There's rumors about this, this, and this. That is, you know, the supernatural side of things. This is our chance.
Yeah, that's true.
Without putting shame on the Bathory name.
Yeah, that's true. I hope you all you guys know that I took my mic off the mic stand and I'm holding it like I'm straight up about to like have a rap battle right now and drop this fucking mic.
And her foot is literally like right by the mic too. So it looks, in my angle, I'm flexible. Looks like she is holding the mic with her foot.
Oh, man.
Well, happy spooky month. Yeah. I hope you guys enjoy the second part of our spooky horror film
thing.
Theme.
This thing we created.
This thing we created.
You know. All right.
And we'll see you next week.
We'll see you.
Bye.